Hi, this is Bob Scully, and welcome to another edition of the World Show, the Free Markets series. In the freedom community, by which I mean those people who are actively fighting for freedom against totalitarianism, fighting for freedom of the press, freedom of association, rule of law, all those things around the world, sometimes at the risk and peril of their lives, in that community, there is no higher honor than the Templeton Freedom Award. And so it's an honor for us to introduce this year's winner, Chris Morin of the Acton Institute. Cast your mind back to the first season of the Free Market series. Father Sirico, Robert Sirico, Catholic priest, sat in the chair. He holds views that may be contrarian in some Catholic circles, but not all. And he explained how he founded the Acton Institute and why he did so. Well, Chris Morin was the co-founder. They met in 1985 at the Newman Center, the Catholic Center, on the campus of Johns Hopkins. Chris Morin went to hear a talk by Father Sirico, and here's what happened. Chris Morin, first, congratulations. The Templeton Freedom Award, I'm told, is the major, the most prestigious prize in the entire freedom movement.
It is. It's terrific.
Were you surprised?
Very surprised. So I guess people at Atlas knew for the last 2 weeks, but I'd even encountered them in the last few weeks, but everyone kept mum.
Yeah, they're very good at that.
So I was completely surprised, like everyone else in the audience, when they named Acton Institute.
And what I find interesting particularly is that the Acton Institute receives the prize, but it's not just for the body of work. It's also for a specific production called Poverty, Inc., a documentary.
That's right. So there were other nominees that weren't a product quite like this, but our nomination was for this documentary dealing with poverty. That's really just beginning to make some waves, and I hope this will accelerate that process.
I'm sure it will. And we want to get into it in a few minutes, but first, if I may, I want to quote, as a lot of our viewers will recall, in the first Free Market series, Father Sirico, who sat in that chair, who's your co-founder at Acton, and who talked about the work that both of you do. And I've just read in the research an excellent description of your first meeting, the two of you. And I'll just read it out because I think it tells the story well. In 1985, Chris Morin, an undergraduate studying economics at Johns Hopkins, attended an evening discussion session at the university's Newman Center. The discussion leader was Robert Sirico, a seminarian graduate student studying theology at the Catholic University of America. To say that the two hit it off is an understatement. The student of economics and the student of theology found themselves in solid agreement that their respective fields of study were not meshing in a way beneficial for mankind. They agreed, Morin recalls, that religious leaders very seldom had any formal training in economics and therefore often held very uninformed economic views of the world. At the same time, many seminaries around the world were actively teaching a positive view of liberation theology, which was an attempt to Christianize a Marxist economic worldview. And I think that describes the first meeting perfectly. And I don't want to say this, but it was made in heaven, right?
Yes. I mean, it's a little unfair to say I was sort of pro-market, I might say. But I was studying economics, and Father had already been mesmerized by the Austrian School of Economics, which is a particular brand, a philosophical way of looking at economics and human action. And when he learned I was a major in economics but hadn't studied Mises or Hayek or Milton Friedman, he was concerned, and so immediately set about to correct me and sent me to various seminars and gave me books. I knew there was a compatibility, obviously, with theology and right thinking, free market economics, but I didn't have a sort of framework, a chassis to put that philosophy upon. So my own reading thereafter, thanks to Father's tutoring, helped me to see this important correlation between freedom in the economic sphere and a right-ordered society morality.
And I'm curious, how long did this take to lead to the foundation of Acton? Because the Acton Institute is not based at Johns Hopkins, it's based in Michigan. And in the interim, Father Sirico completed his theological studies, was ordained a priest. You completed your economics diploma. So thereafter, how quickly did you decide to found Acton?
That's right. I mean, we had been doing activities while both in school. So they were proto-Acton activities in a sense. I remember organizing a conference with Father Seminarian Robert Sirico at Johns Hopkins called Who's Afraid of Freedom? Hmm. And we brought in a great set of speakers, and it was a whole Saturday afternoon. We had 100-plus people at it. So in a way, that was the first Acton conference, but that was 1986. It wasn't until 1990 that we began. And that, frankly, Father had written a prescient piece in the Wall Street Journal predicting the fall of the Sandinistas in Nicaragua a few days before they indeed fell, and nobody else was saying that would happen. So we had this shining moment in the sun where everyone thought he was a guru. He was getting calls for giving speeches and to write, and he needed help. So he had this modest idea, I need someone to help me. And he called me and he said, you know, do you think you could come help me organize a process and a way to project these ideas beyond what I can do by myself? And that was sort of the nub of the idea.
And you were both in sync with the times, really, because people were starting to take a hard look at Marxism and all its excesses and mistakes and really horrible crimes in many cases. And Pope John Paul II from Poland knew a lot about that, and he encouraged that. But I'm wondering, though, how difficult was it still to combat a kind of the liberation theology first, but also a kind of mushy good feeling towards all and towards all ideologies in the church?
That's right. Well, of course, 89 was the fall, literally, of the Berlin Wall and of real communism. And we could see the results of generations of socialist experimentation. The results were not good. Mm-hmm. And people of goodwill have to be concerned with results, not just philosophy, you know? What happens at the end of the day really matters. And so, you know, we had a lot of people who were open to a new way of looking at the world versus the socialist model in the church and out of the church. But how to get there, they were concerned, because free markets depend so much on self-interest and you know, people following their own motivations that it feels like greedy and dirty somehow. So moral people and religious people, especially in the church, were uncomfortable with embracing capitalism. Mm-hmm. In 1991, John Paul II wrote the encyclical Centesimus Annus, which was really this warm embrace of entrepreneurship and a free society and market the business economy, which was essentially what he defined as free markets. And so that was, in a real way, an apologia for the nascent beginnings of Acton Institute, and we worked from there forward. But to be honest, most of the religious institutions were captured already by people who had the more socialist paradigm. And so it took a good while for us to break down some of those barriers. In the meantime, we were working with seminarians. We weren't trying to work with established priests or bishops. We were working with the young people that a generation later, which is now, would be running parishes and running schools of theology and seminaries, et cetera. And I think you know, we work well outside of the Catholic Church. It happens that Father and I are Catholic, but from the very beginning, our work
ecumenical.
Was well beyond even the Christian traditions. Our goal is, how do we help people of faith, including Islam and Judaism, et cetera, how do we help them find a way forward to build pluralistic societies where values are incorporated that support freedom?
And it presents you with a different challenge in a way, kind of a paradox, because where capitalism is about greed and consumerism, you're not interested in that. I mean, it can happen, but to you that's not the interesting part at all. You reject that. What you like about capitalism is the creation, the production, the innovation, the freedom, the progress for all, and the fact that the rising tide lifts all boats. But there have been so many excesses in the 80s and 90s with a lot of greed and exaltation of materialism, you have to fight that as well. The Gordon Gekko greed is good philosophy.
We just published a book in the last 2 months on consumerism, which is a check on, I think, the avarice of making money an idol. Mm-hmm. And absolutely right. You know, freedom is essential, is necessary for a good society, but it's not sufficient. You know, we need a free and virtuous society. And so capitalism, free markets, can only exist and continue to produce the goods and services people need if people are honest and moral. So really, these go hand in hand. We need to do both. Help to inculcate a moral culture where people are honest, mm-hmm. and they do what they say they will do and honor contracts and all the rest, the fundamentals, the Ten Commandments, et cetera.
Yeah.
But they have to also support this vibrant engine, which is natural to the human condition, which is the market economy, the free economy.
And a battle like that is never quite won. But did you sense, at least during the years of John Paul II, did you sense a lot of progress in that direction in the Catholic family?
Tremendous progress. So at the beginning, I told you we expected to be kept out of the institutions of the Church, but along the way, we've been warmly embraced. So now we do seminars at the highest levels in the Vatican. We work with bishops. Mm-hmm. We certainly work with seminarians all over the world. I'm heading to Brazil tomorrow to give a number of lectures in different places and meetings with bishops and well-placed people. So our work, thankfully, has been able to permeate the entire sort of religious establishment.
Looking now at religion more globally on a planetary scale, are you occasionally questioned or do you feel challenged by things like Islamic fundamentalism, Islamic radicalism, or... in a very different sphere in South America, Protestant evangelicals who are progressing enormously, those kinds of movements, they're gaining, and they're not exactly moderate. Do you have a view on that?
Well, yes, and I think people are rightly afraid of the extremists wherever they're found, including in Islam. I don't think they represent the best of Islam, and they certainly don't represent anywhere near a majority of Islam. So there are plenty of people within Islam who love liberty and are not afraid of other religions and want to build a free and pluralistic society where all religions can be present and at the table. So our job is to help find and raise up those liberals within Islam to help their voices have ascendancy. Pardon me. The evangelicals throughout Latin America and other places in the world are much more favorably disposed to free markets and free enterprise and limited government. That's good. There's a tendency in some extreme forms of Christianity to make an idol of wealth. You know, they call it the prosperity gospel.
Yeah, they go the other way completely. It's kind of odd.
Yeah, I don't want to generalize about evangelicals. Many of them are not nearly that extreme. But, of course, there are some people who make it an idol as well. And so we have to challenge both of those sides.
And Poverty Inc., let's not forget about that. After all that, you won the Templeton Award for that. It's a very ambitious international, worldwide documentary production. What is it?
It's a full-length documentary. It's just under 90 minutes. It's broad audience documentary. It captures footage and stories from 20-some countries. It took several years to make, so it was a very big project. And basically what it does is it shows the massive poverty industry we've created with good intentions, I think, in large part, certainly in the early days, to help the poor around the world. And we've spent, of course, billions and billions of dollars on aid, government-to-government aid over the years, but it hasn't worked. The results aren't there. And yet a lot of people are getting rich off the poor. That's part of the irony that this documentary shows, that there's a whole poverty industry that has grown up to help the poor. Only the poor aren't being helped. So it's time to rethink how we're taking care of the poor. That's the whole essence of this documentary.
Yeah, there's that famous quip, which you used actually when you got the award on stage. The left loves the poor so much, they create more and more of them. And it's true that there is a parasitical quality to the foreign aid and even the charitable aid that we give to poorer countries. It's parasitical in the sense that it requires the poor to continue existing so that it can perpetuate itself as a system of aid. And you come from the other direction. You say entrepreneurship and empowering people is the way to go.
That's right. Nobody wants to be a beggar. Nobody wants to stay poor and depend on other people. People have talents and abilities, and they want to do for themselves. Many people are just excluded from the natural order of things and from the economy. And that's done by barriers such as trade barriers. It's done by lack of rule of law in their countries.
Mm-hmm.
It's done by collusion in their countries between government-granted monopolies. There's lots of ways that people are just kept out of the economic system. And we need to look at those, identify those, and break them down so people can be who they're meant to be and can be productive for themselves and their families. So there's a lot of things we can do, starting with basics. The rule of law, private property, mm-hmm. And space for entrepreneurships. You know, most of the third world have vibrant economies, but they're black economies, so they're in the black market. Because it's just too difficult for any average person to wade through the bureaucracy and the real costs for getting the licensures to start a business.
Or even have a mortgage.
Or have a mortgage, right. And a mortgage is the way a lot of people are able to finance a business. You know, they can mm-hmm. use it as collateral, et cetera, if they own a home. So they're really basic things that we take for granted in the developed West that people in the third world need.
Therefore, are we misreading? I'm flashing back to my catechism classes now as a kid. The Sermon on the Mount, Matthew, blessed are the poor. That was repeated to us over and over, and we internalized it. It was given to us as an example of the fundamental dignity of every human being and not worshiping wealth per se. And those things are still true. But you give a different reading of it.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's a different reading. I mean, on a spiritual level, we all need to be poor in the sense, I mean, when you're poor, you're dependent on others.
Mm-hmm.
So spiritually, the parable tells us that we need to be dependent on God. We all need to be totally poor in the sight of God. We shouldn't really celebrate poverty in the real world because it's nothing to celebrate. and it's so unnecessary. And mm-hmm. in the context of some of these problems and barriers to entry that I just related, it's terribly unjust. It's terribly unjust to keep mm-hmm. people poor when we live in such a wealthy world where so many opportunities for people to do for themselves.
And justice, basic justice, requires that we do something. That's where liberation theology started. That's how it started, that we must do something to alleviate that. It's just that something in their case and in your case are not the same.
That's right. And I think liberation theology in large part was this great inspiration to love and care for the poor. And it was in large part led by religious leaders who would go through the third world and see desperately poor people.
Mm-hmm.
Then they would see tremendously wealthy people over here. And their heart would cry out that this is somehow unjust. And actually in some of those countries, maybe it was because of the collusion between government
sure.
and big business and all the rest. But it's not axiomatically unjust that some have a lot and some have a little. You know, that's not necessarily the case, and it wouldn't be the case in a free society. It's often the case in societies that are not free, which is why we need to promote freedom.
And Poverty Inc., the production itself, I haven't seen it. I'm told it's quite convincing. But I'm also told that it's getting pushback from the poverty establishment, which would be kind of logical.
Some. But, you know, ironically, many of the points we make in it are unassailable. And we've had many folks who are well-established in the aid industry who have told us publicly and some privately, you're exactly right. You're on to things. We've had folks from the far left praise the film. Michael Moore, who's a famous
yeah.
Documentarian, has said it's a terrific film. It'll change your whole way of looking at poverty in the third world. Was his
fellow Michiganite.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, people on the more sort of free market right, if I can say, have also praised the film. There's something in it for everyone because we rightly look at what's not working and we look at sort of we criticize crony capitalism and people mm-hmm. who are trying to get ahead by closing out others. That's just unjust. And I think we can all come together on some of these principles. And I think this documentary may well be a tipping point where people from across the political spectrum come together and agree on some fundamental justice issues regarding the poor.
Reading about that meeting you had with seminarian Sirico, who later became Father Sirico, but that initial meeting took place at the Newman Center at Johns Hopkins, and just that name took me back to my years at McGill, where there was also a Newman Center, and I think in most universities across North America there was a Newman Center, a Catholic center. And I was just wondering, does that still exist? Are there still vibrant centers of Catholic community on campuses, or is that passé?
No, I think that's happening. You know, you have some tremendous Catholic universities in America that are experiencing a rebirth, and you have some new ones, relatively new ones in mm-hmm. the last generation that are doing very well. I think you do have some Catholic universities in name only that have long since kind of abandoned the distinctiveness of their tradition, religious traditions. But God is not dead on campuses.
And since the passing of John Paul II and the retirement of Benedict XVI, are you still in sync with the Vatican?
Well, we're still very involved in trying to be of service, intellectual service to the Church. We have an office at the Vatican, have for many years. It's probably fair to say that Pope Francis doesn't fully understand the framework of free markets and how that helps the poor. Mm-hmm. You know, he comes from Argentina, which is one of these places where the most successful have done so by colluding with the government, which is unjust, and he knows that's unjust, and he's decried that. The problem is he doesn't decry the collusion, he decries what he sees as business and capitalism, but that's really not what it is. And, you know, I think if we can have an opportunity to sort of lay out and show him the distinction between free market business economy, where people are able to compete honestly and fairly on an even playing field, versus crony capitalism in much of Latin America or elsewhere, he would see the differences. We've had a meeting with the Holy Father. We've given him copies of Poverty Cure, which is a predecessor film to Poverty Inc.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps he'll watch it and we'll be able to continue the dialogue with him.
Well, I can easily imagine. He doesn't live in the Apostolic Palace. He lives in Santa Marta. It's a more informal setting, we're told. So he could have a popcorn evening and show your movie.
I hope so.
I can easily see he's an open-minded man.
Yeah.
Whatever else we may say, we have to recognize that. And you and Father Sirico are very convincing people. There's a chance you could bring him around.
Well, he's repeatedly called for dialogue. And before he came to the United States for his visit a couple months ago, he explicitly said, I know I have critics in the United States, and I'm going to read them before I arrive, because I need to know what people are saying, and I need to be open to dialogue.
One question I don't want to forget, does Father Sirico still wear the Roman collar?
Absolutely, every day.
I thought that was a great thing that he did.
Yeah, that's, you know, much more common in more sort of traditional environments in the United States, but I think, you know, there's a whole generation of priests that grew up under John Paul II and Benedict that are recapturing sort of the traditions, and that's one symbol of it.
And Acton has grown. I've noticed reading about the number of employees you have, number of activities, your budgets, all of that has grown. And since you live out in the brave new world of philanthropy, you fend for yourselves, that's the proof of the pudding. The otherwise you wouldn't attract backers and donors, and you couldn't survive and grow. So I think we can safely say now Acton is quite the success.
It is. We've continued to grow. Thanks be to God. It's hard work, but you know, if you hire really good people, you know, my philosophy is hire people much smarter than you are. For me, that's easy to do. But you know, the goal is to get terrifically talented people and keep them inspired for the common mission.
Well, it's a great mission, and I congratulate you for sticking with it, and I wish you long life and good luck.
Thank you very much.
Chris Moran, winner of the Templeton Freedom Award, was our guest this week on the Free Markets series of The World Show. I'm Bob Scully. Have a great week. Thanks.